This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Trent Gillis, the online editor and producer for the program. Here I speak with Abir Razi, a college student from Westerville, Ohio, who will be graduating this spring with a degree in economics. He responded to our questions about the moral and spiritual aspects of the economic downturn with this story, which we asked him to tell in his own words.
So I'm a college student, and I'm about to graduate. Today, it's safe to be a college student, but it's not so safe to graduate. What happens after graduation is unpredictable and unreliable because of the financial crisis. The economists say the financial crisis is larger than they thought, but at the same time, it's a small crisis. Taken relatively, it's just one part of an ever-larger future crisis. I've seen the problems looming for my generation grow from hurdles into mountains before my eyes. The tensing political and economic climate, the racked social security system and my parents that it might not be providing for, the severe ecological limitations of oil, water, and food. Sometimes I feel like I'm in over my head, and the anxiety gets to me. These problems have really provoked me, and have got me questioning many of the assumptions I was raised with. I question whether working and being happy are worthy aspirations within themselves, or if there's a much deeper end to life. I've been confronted with the fact that material society won't always deliver on its promises. Perhaps it's only a facade and may itself collapse. I've questioned whether man has in fact been progressing, and if our material progress has caused us to lose sight of our incomparably more important individual, intellectual, and spiritual progressions. In fact, these assumptions may be the real cause of our current crisis. In other words, our intellectual and spiritual weakness has caused the financial collapse. We've come to rely on material society and the explanations it offers instead of confronting the difficult aspects of life. In our pursuit of ease and, it should be said, flight from addressing the vulnerabilities and uncertainties of life, we've wrapped ourselves in an unsustainable and precarious situation. Our lives will be laden with unaddressed anxieties, and more importantly, we won't have our priorities straight until we confront these more difficult aspects of life and stop relying on false myths and assumptions. In ways, it's a blessing. The financial crisis is forcing us to do it. And as the financial crisis exposes these suspect myths and the precarious condition of man manifests, perhaps we can gain some benefit. I hope it'll inspire a deeper awakening among us, a return to what's important. Even if things regress far beyond our anticipation, it won't perturb us if we have a profound understanding of life and purpose, that death is far more important than any crisis and, if anything, should concern us far more. My religion, Islam, teaches me what's important: God, family, and community. It teaches me to hold my material possessions in my hand and not my heart, so if they're taken away from me, I won't be affected. It teaches me to count my wins and my losses as one, because they are both important facets of a far more important journey. Yes, I'm graduating, but no, I won't let anxiety get to me. In times of struggle, there's work to be done and people to be helped. I'll remember what's important, and I'll make do.
Thank you. What are you studying? Or?
I'm studying, in fact, actually economics.
Economics, okay.
Yeah, which is pretty different.
So as we talk about this economic crisis in moral and spiritual terms, you see it as a, it sounds like a moral and spiritual crisis. Do you?
Yes, that's right. I think that's more appropriate.
Okay.
In fact, I think economically, you know, they say sometimes that this crisis has its roots in the last couple of years in all the different complex financial transactions we've been making. And sometimes they say in the past few decades in the different legislations we've been practicing and the trends of banks and corporations. But I think it's not wrong to say that this extends even deeper into our own attitudes and our condition, our state spiritually. And perhaps it spawns from that.
You're about to graduate. And what you've been learning over these last 3, 4, 5 years, are you thinking about what you've learned differently?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if you could say that, because
okay.
I think I've always been, maybe you could say, disappointed with the discipline I've been studying. So I've always been critical about it. So I don't think I've been thinking about it differently.
Is there an example of something that comes to mind as far as something you were learning and you're like, well, you were disappointed in it and you...
Yeah. Well, I think, so initially, I was interested in economics more for I was interested more in international relations or politics, and I thought the way to understand that best is to follow the money. And naturally, that led me to economics. So when I started studying the discipline, I was pretty disappointed in that it didn't really shed much insight into what's happening in the world. And it was just something different. Like, economics was just focused on itself. It was very disconnected from real-world phenomena. And that actually sheds a lot of insight into what's happening, because economics naturally drives a lot of what's happening in the world. And when you sort of tap into that economic world of academics and finance and corporations, then you understand what sort of principles are driving these people. And if you have a critical perspective, you see how that relates to society and politics. But you need that critical perspective to be able to do that, since the discipline doesn't do it itself. In fact, the people are, like I said, pretty disconnected.
Do you feel that economics unto itself is disconnected from larger social concerns or other avenues?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there was an American historian, Harry Elmer Barnes, I believe was his name, and he was describing the social philosophers, the development of sociology and economics and psychology, and he said that these people were concerned with the general misery caused by the industrial system and a factory society. And so that's very interesting, that was a concern, and they were concerned with making society better at that level. And I think we've lost that perspective, maybe generally in the social sciences, and certainly for economics, as far as I've studied. And it seems that more we've been concerned with just reproducing the results within the individual disciplines instead of creating interdisciplinary work in order to understand real-world phenomena and understanding the really complex situation we're in that's, you know, unprecedented, naturally.
Are there any people out there that you're looking to that you think may be doing that or trying to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are many people out there who are trying to do that. And I turn to many of them. In terms of economists, I think it's pretty difficult to find. There's a few, but all the people generally are critical, and so they're sort of swept into the side of the general discourse.
Critical of just what's happening, or in what way?
Critical of society. So okay. I guess you can say they're critical of basic assumptions of the American dream, or whether humanity is really progressing, or whether material progression is really what we should be after, and things like that. And as far as economics goes, the discipline is sort of based upon that, on human rationality and the proof they take for the perfection of the discipline is that it has in fact produced all these great results. So when you start questioning that, you know, what are the disadvantages to these results, and you're critical in that way, then you gain a lot of enemies.
Do you see, because of this economic crisis, this may be an opportunity for some of that interdisciplinary study or understanding of what's going on and how we should function as a civil society?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think one thing that Obama got right is that this is really a time for change. And we can, I think, as a society, make some good changes that we need to make. Perhaps in academia, in terms of economics, sociology, and psychology, I think this is certainly good times to reassess the doctrines of the discipline. That, you know, why weren't we able to anticipate this, or what are the things that we're not addressing, and things like that. And even personally, within our own lives, making those spiritual changes, I guess you can say.
What are some of the, maybe stepping outside of economics, what are some of the moral and spiritual resources or virtues that you're bringing to your approach to the economic crisis? Are there people, or are there things you're reading? Are there communities?
As a Muslim, I naturally draw heavily from, you know, the Islamic tradition. And, you know, it's reflecting a lot on the Quran, which heavily emphasizes the temporary nature of this life and death and the preparation for the next life, which many of the spiritual traditions do. And I think associating that type of heavy spirituality with the founders of the discipline, like Adam Smith and Auguste Comte, and their ambition for social betterment has really influenced me. mean as far as economics goes. And I think that's really sort of keeping that perspective on what's important and trying to apply the tools in that direction.
You know, it's funny, when you hear Adam Smith uttered nowadays, you don't hear it in that social betterment light as much.
Yeah, that's right. And that's actually a shame. He's written quite a bit on that, and you know, on social allocation, and how he wrote in The Wealth of Nations often that the, you know, invisible hand that you hear so often nowadays, mm-hmm. it often fails, and that we need to reconcile for these failures. And he acknowledged that, and he wrote a lot of stuff that doesn't you don't hear about it. He wrote an entire book on the theory of moral sentiments, which is a interesting mm-hmm. secular book which creates a whole system of ethics, which is it's forgotten, you know, in applying economics nowadays.
So as you go forward and you're graduating and you're looking out there, I mean, you know, what are you doing different, or what do you hope to do differently, and how? I know that's a big question.
Yeah,
that's
a big question, but, you know, I'm still pretty young, so yes. Even if this crisis didn't happen, what I'm doing now would be different than what I would be doing a year ago. So, you know, I'm always changing still.
Well, how about career? I mean, career path-wise, even?
Oh, that's a tough question right now. But, you know, I'm still exploring my options.
Yeah.
Personally, I want to do something where I'm changing communities. So there's a few things I want to learn about. One, and specifically, if you want to get into specifics,
yes,
I want to study microfinance. In fact, I'm going to be going to Pakistan in a few months to work with a microfinance organization.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting experience. And specifically, I'd also like to study my religion a little more. The Islamic intellectual tradition, it has a very strong intellectual tradition, but it's been lost for, you can argue, several decades or a couple centuries, but it's certainly been lost. And I'd like to get back in touch with that tradition.
Are you referring to, like, schools of jurisprudence or different types of texts that may be out of that?
Well, those are both certainly a part of it. I think it's the whole thing. It's the whole package of Islam, the jurisprudence, getting in touch with the primary sources, the different ways they've been applied to different times, and understanding, you know, the way the scholars were thinking. Getting in touch with that sort of scholarly train of thought, and that's, you know, the scholarly community, if that's possible.
Microfinance in Pakistan, any particular reason? I mean, you hear about microfinance in Southeast Asia a lot more, Africa some. Pakistan, I haven't heard about as much, a little bit in India.
Yeah, that's very interesting. In fact, Pakistan is probably, I think it is the first country where microfinance was started, by a man named Akhtar Hamid Khan, and so it's being heavily applied there in a few successful models, and so I'll be going to work with a couple of those. In fact, they're applying it to cities, and so you often hear microfinance being applied in rural areas, but it's working in some they call it Kachi Abadis in Urdu, the slums around the big cities. So I want to go see, you know, how that works. It's interesting, you know, now we see in America these tent cities popping up in Sacramento, and by the news and the trends and that you hear, it seems like things are just going to get worse, so this might be a tool we can even utilize here at home.
Well, I mean, you're in Columbus, Ohio, right? The Ohio State University, I assume?
Yes,
that's where
right.
You attended? That has its own history, industry of different sorts, and what are you seeing around there? What are you experiencing?
You know, not too much.
Okay.
It's generally things are staying the same. You see a little bit of the effects of the college losing its budget. You know, thank God my family's been relatively stable through this situation. But I have been volunteering with a small organization which does things for the working poor here in Columbus. And if you're in touch with the right community, you can see it's really affecting people. But it's sort of affecting the people who are, you know, temporary workers. And
does the concept of zakat mean something different to you now than maybe it did a couple years ago?
Oh, zakat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't thought of that way.
Okay.
But I think it certainly it can be applied now a lot more to the U.S., you know. Huh. Usually come around Eid time and the masjids, we collect all the zakat and we typically ship it overseas somewhere. But that would be a very good change to see using that zakat money domestically.
Two final questions here. So what kind of wisdom and leadership are you looking for at this time? You mentioned Obama a little bit earlier. Are there other local or global people that you're looking for, or certain types of leadership?
Yeah, locally, you know, we have, I guess you can say, just the community leaders in my community. Usually, you know, on Friday prayers we have in Islam that we're required to go to, they give a sermon, a khutbah. And so they usually give some, you know, spiritual advice, you can say. So I'm always trying to, you know, keep that. And I think at a larger level, again, I'm drawing heavily from the Islamic tradition. There's a school of scholars in, that are in Berkeley, California, with the Zaytuna Institute.
Hmm.
And so I draw heavily from them, too.
Yes, I get their newsletter. I'm trying to remember one of the primary names that I see.
Yeah, Hamza Yusuf.
Yes.
Hamza Yusuf and Imam Zaid Shaker. Those are...
Okay. Why do they resonate with you so much? I mean, way out in California and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they've been very unique in that they've been able to connect this intellectual tradition of Islam that I'm talking about with modern times. And they've been able to create a good synthesis that first generation of immigrants are able to relate to. And I guess you can say an open-minded Islam, which people are able to identify with, which is it's a rare thing.
You know, some people see this crisis, this meltdown, if you will, as the end of that American dream as we knew it, as we know it, whether that's education, opportunity, cars, houses, family, as the way we've been living it. I mean, do you see that as the end of the American dream, or do you see another kind of American dream, or is that, or something different?
You know, it could be. You know, I don't know how bad this crisis is going to get, but if your American dream is to be able to get a big house and a nice car and take it easy from then on, it might be the end of that. But I don't think that's any reason to despair. You know, there's always work to be done, and there's always, you know, good things going on. So there's certainly this country needs a lot of work, and I think maybe the concept of the American dream will shift.
Well, I wish you luck in your travels to Pakistan. That sounds really exciting, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Abir Razi, a college student from Westerville, Ohio. This is Repossessing Virtue, speaking of faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.